It's Let's Talk Legal on the Talk Station FM 107.1 with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. And as always, as we begin the program, to remind you, if you want to find out more either about today's topic or any of the topics we've discussed in the past, go online to their website, harvellandcollins.com. They have recorded all of these programs, and they're available for you to listen to at your leisure. Harvell and, spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com, or give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050. And with that introduction to Cecil and Wes, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Lockwood. Hope
afternoon,
you're doing
Lockwood.
Great. Last week, you and I touched on five of the top 10 estate planning do's and don'ts, if you will, and we will finish that up next week or the week thereafter. But Wes is so many times in court on a Tuesday afternoon that he's with us this afternoon. So we're going to talk about the differences between state of North Carolina courts and federal courts. And some of our listeners really right out of the gate here don't even know what in the world we mean. But yes, Lockwood, there is a court system in our United States of America known as the federal court. And this is a United States court system, if you will, versus what folks are most familiar with, which is state court or, you know, state of North Carolina court. The state of North Carolina courts, you know, are the superior court, the district court, the juvenile court, domestic law court, the magistrate, many things that we have spoken about. But parallel to this state of North Carolina court system is a federal court system regulated, of course, by our United States Congress and is federal in nature. And so Wes is going to explain how does one or why is one in a federal court versus being in a state of North Carolina court. There are certain rights, if you will. There are certain elements to jurisdiction that will remove a case from the state of North Carolina courts into the federal court. And, of course, sometimes the case just begins in the federal court. So Wes is going to help us understand what are the jurisdiction limits and elements, and what is kind of the difference between operating, navigating a federal court case versus a state of North Carolina case.
I would assume that the actual physical location of those courts are obviously different as well. In other words, there is a federal court, if I'm not mistaken, in New Bern, but there's not one in Carteret County, is there?
No, that's correct. Okay. Our Eastern North Carolina courts are going to be Wilmington. We have one in New Bern, Raleigh, Greenville, Elizabeth City. Those are the ones in closest proximity to here in Carteret County.
All right.
Yeah. All right. So, you know, most attorneys, if they litigate, they're going to practice primarily, especially Eastern North Carolina, you know, attorneys in this area, they're going to be in state court, you know, more than federal court as far as civil practice goes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you're going to be in the various courts, like, of course, we have our superior court here in our district, Carteret County, that's in Beaufort.
Right.
We have New Bern. We have obviously the one in Pamlico County. You know, we've got, you know, Wilmington and, you know, various counties, you know, Lenoir County, you know, on up in Washington and Beaufort County. So, you know, those are the, you know, kind of very local state courts. And of course, those are divided, as Cecil mentioned, in district court, which is the lower level, and the district court's going to deal, and I'm talking about civil primarily here, the lower cases, the less amount in controversy, and then superior court really doesn't even have a limit as far as how high you can go in state court. So this isn't about, okay, well, if it's a $1 million or more case, it goes to federal court. That's not the way it works. You can have just as important case in state court. And the reason I'm bringing this up when we're talking about federal court here today is because I tried a case in federal court last week up in Elizabeth City with Judge Terrence Boyle. Mm-hmm. But the federal court, as far as cases ending up in federal court, you know, how do they end up there? Well, it's normally either a state court case that has been removed to federal court because a party has filed a motion to have it removed, or actually a notice to have it removed on one of two grounds, or it either started in federal court. And the grounds to end up in federal court is either a federal question,
mm-hmm.
meaning it's an issue of federal law, or it's complete diversity and the amount of controversy is over $55,000. So if you have each of the parties, plaintiff and defendant, from residing in citizenship in a different state, then it can be removed.
Now, okay.
Not to get into too much detail about my case from last week, but it was a dispute about who the surviving spouse was, and you may think, well, my goodness, that's state of Nevada law, right?
Right. Well, right.
But it had to do with a particular retirement plan that was regulated under ERISA, which is a federal body of law. So it was filed originally locally, removed to federal court, and then 3 years later, there was a lot of things that happened in those 3 years, but then tried, you know, last week before a jury.
That's a good question that you just introduced there. In a federal court, as well as, of course, obviously we talked to Superior Court and District Court cases, is there a jury in federal court cases?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Federal court is different in many ways. You know, the state court system is, in North Carolina, they're trying to implement e-filing, okay, meaning you file all your documents online.
Uh-huh.
You don't have to actually physically file paper at the courthouse.
Right.
Okay. And some counties already have that implemented, and they're kind of, you know, going county by county and implementing that through mm-hmm. the state. Of course, Wake County, you know, where our capital is, of course, is one that's all this e-filing. But all of federal court is e-filing. Every bit of it, everything you do is e-filed. Some additional things that are different in federal court are that, you know, you have to file a brief. And when I say a brief, that's like a memorandum. That's like a legal document in which you set forth, you know, an issue, the rules that apply, you analyze it, you provide a conclusion with anything you're asking the court to do. You could be asked for an extension of time to answer a complaint that's being filed. You still have to file a brief with it.
Mm-hmm.
What you don't have to do that in state court. And
okay.
You have to file, you know, the motion. You have to file the brief, the proposed order. You have to state whether you talked with opposing counsel about it, whether they agree or disagree. I mean, there are all these rules. In the federal court, it's interesting because you feel like, as an attorney practicing in the federal court, that there's such almost an iron curtain between you as the attorney and the court, because you can't really get to anybody. You can't communicate. I mean, you can, but it's not that easy.
Mm-hmm.
You can't communicate with the clerk that well. You know, it's not a conversation type thing. Everything's done with motions and briefs that are filed in on the PACER system with federal court.
So it's a more technical, I'll use that word, a more technical environment, very, very cut and dried then, if I'm understanding your description.
It is very technical. I would say that there is some unnecessary technicalities, in my opinion, in the federal court. You've got local rules, and you've got the actual rules of federal court rules, and then you've got the customs of each particular judge. So there's a lot of trying to navigate through the way that the court wants things done, and you know, it's every federal court judge I find has his or her own way that they want things to be done.
Uh-huh.
State court, like when you go into a trial in state court, you know, there's not that many variations. It's pretty much done the same way every time. The jury selection is done the same way every time, pretty much. The motions are done at the same time or the same way, pretty much. The trial progresses, you know, very similarly. But then in the federal court, it's almost like the judge, this is his courtroom, and this is the way he does things, and it might be a little bit different than what you know about. Like, for example, the case that we just tried, well, we didn't know when we were going to be trying the case, and then got a notice about 5 or 6 weeks before the trial that, boom, this is where we have to be there. Now, that might not sound like a very difficult thing to the average listener, but when you have witnesses from Louisiana, the Memphis area, and New York area, and you've got to try a case in Elizabeth City in 5 weeks, that's a little difficult. But you know what? You can't really tell the court, look, we've got a problem because of all these witnesses. You've got to get it together.
In our North Carolina court system, which is really an incredibly admirable court system, you know, superior court judges many times are local lawyers that then maybe are appointed by the governor, or they may run for office as a superior court judge or district court judge. They kind of float in and out of possibly a private practice. They're a lawyer, and then they're a judge, and then maybe they go back to private practice. They, of course, are a judge for a while, and then maybe they retire. Of course, let's just right out of the gate say a federal court judge, just to remind our listeners, is appointed by the President of the United States, approved by Congress, is appointed for lifetime. So a federal court judge is the courtroom and her, and we do have a wonderful federal judge, Judge Flanagan, we have several female judges, of course, and of course these judges, you know, have complete and total control over their courtrooms, as one would expect, and as Wes was mentioning, have certain kinds of rules and demeanor and personality, all of that, but that doesn't change, whereas in state court, you know, judges will somewhat come and go, much more so than in the federal court system, where the judges are there for lifetime.
Wow. We're talking with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins, and we're talking about the differences between state and federal court here on Let's Talk Legal. And again, just to remind you, the website, harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, please, harvellandcollins.com, or their number, 252 area code 726-9050. The other aspect of this, and, you know, okay, so the difference in how the courts are managed, and to your point a few moments ago, Wes, that even the technicalities of the highly technical, and because of, I guess, really the fact that you've got these distant courts, they're not just a local court, as you just pointed out, an interesting challenge just getting the witnesses to the courtroom as well. Do you have instances, I'm curious, about continuances, you know, sudden continuances? Do those situations happen? I know they happen in district court, but do they happen in state court, but do they happen in federal court as well?
They do. Under that scenario of being put on notice 5 or 6 weeks before the trial and having to get witnesses from all over the place, as opposed to asking for a continuance, because we did have some issues with witnesses in that particular case.
Mm-hmm.
Opposing counsel and I, who's an attorney out of Raleigh, agreed for about, I think it was five depositions of a or five witnesses that we needed to have in court to go ahead and do those via video. It's called a Dabin essay. It's actually Dabini essay, video deposition. So we set that up so that we take the video trial deposition of each of these people so we can play that before the jury at trial for these right. people. For example, we had a pastor who had to testify, but he was committed to a service, mm-hmm. a ceremony that was taking place in Houston, Texas, and he couldn't be there, and obviously he couldn't ask the couple to change their wedding date.
Right.
So
right.
Yeah. You know, things like that. Well, you know, little did opposing counsel and I know that that Judge Boyle, who did an excellent job, by the way, at the trial, absolutely hates video depositions at trial.
Oh, wow.
You know, he did not like those, but they're allowed under the rules, so that's what we did. So he was an equal opportunity disliker of both me and the other attorney with regard to that. But so that's what we did in that particular situation. But you know, another example of a nuance, something that's different that didn't really catch me off guard. It was just different. Was that the manner in which jury selection was done? A lot of times in state court, when you pick a jury, it's an all day affair.
Right.
I mean, you might have 50, 80 people, 100 people in your jury pool, and 12 at a time are called up, and you're questioning each one to make sure that there's no, you know, bias, or they don't know any of the parties, they don't know any of the witnesses, and you're asking about their background and that type of thing. And, you know, once you strike, and you have 8 strikes in state court, you know, once you strike, you know, one, for example, then you fill that seat, then you're asking further questions of that person. So you can see it's somewhat of a process to get through all that. Well, the manner in which Judge Boyle last week conducted his, when I say his jury selection, it was like almost 100% his jury selection, which was fine. It worked out great, was that he had 15 people that were called up, put in the box. Everybody else was gone. It's 15 people, that's it. And then he asked a bunch of questions, which are certainly well thought out questions based on the case. He then called the attorneys up and wanted to know if we had any further questions. And frankly, I don't think one of us wanted to offend him.
Right.
So we said no further questions for the no further voir dire questions for the jury. And they said, okay, you get 3 strikes. And I didn't know exactly what he meant. But what that meant was that opposing counsel gets a strike, we get a strike. They get a strike, we get a strike. They get a strike, we get a strike. Right there. That's it. And then whoever's left, that's the jury. That's it. Nobody, don't fill any seats. It's just, that's it. That's the jury. And then opposing counsel, as we were going through that, said, well, we're fine with the jury. We don't want to use our 3rd strike. Judge said, nope, you have to use all 3 of them. He said, you always try to strike somebody. What are you doing? Strike. Use it. So, at any rate, we just ended up, and actually one person had a conflict, so we ended up with a jury of 8. And because we had 15, and we did our 3 strikes each, that brought us down to 9. And then one person had, a medical issue, and it was 8. But you know how long that jury selection took? About 30 minutes.
Wow.
But you understand as well, Lockwood, we have people coming from all over the place.
Okay.
And nobody's from Elizabeth City. So there's no conflicts.
Ah.
So that makes it a little easier.
Right.
So
okay,
interesting thing to talk about for a moment is, you know, how do you even get to federal court? Why are you even there? And I'm going to let Wes kind of doctor this up a little bit, but let's just begin with, I mean, clearly, obviously, Lockwood, if there is a federal issue involved,
right.
federal law, okay. But the other real intriguing jurisdictional angle, and Wes, I'd like for him to talk more about this, but it's what's called diversity. And if there's a citizen of North Carolina that has a strong case against a citizen of New York or Colorado, then there is a philosophy of law issue that says that, you know, We don't want the North Carolina court to control that controversy, nor do we want the Colorado court to control that. It's not fair to either party. And so, therefore, we will put it in an independent jurisdiction known as federal court. So, Wes, tell us a little bit about that, that diversity of jurisdiction.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Right. So, probably a good example for this area would be that, you know, we still have and we have had a pretty significant number of cases, no pun intended, spinning off of Hurricane Florence.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, where there's a dispute between a property owner and an insurance company.
Right.
Well, most of these, if not all of these insurance companies, are not North Carolina-based.
Right.
So most plaintiffs in this area probably would want to file their lawsuit if they have a dispute insurance company as to whether the insurance company is paid enough or, you know, whatever it may be. They probably want to file it in their backyard.
Right.
They probably want to file it in Carteret County because just about everybody here knows someone who probably had an issue with the hurricane and may have an issue with what insurance paid.
Uh-huh.
But because these insurance companies are located as a corporations and are their contacts, their citizenship of the corporation, so to speak, is almost exclusively in other states, then most of these cases are most of these cases are then removed to federal court. So that's a good example. You have to have that complete diversity of two different states. So if you've got plaintiff North Carolina and defendant corporation from Florida, then if the choice of the defendant is to remove it to federal court, then that's what happens. But it's still, you know, tried in the Eastern District here in North Carolina. You don't necessarily know where it will go to. You don't know if it'll be tried in Elizabeth City or in Greenville or in New Bern or in Raleigh, Wilmington. You don't know that until you get a little bit further down the line.
Okay, that leads me to the question of, you know, identification of the state where the court case is actually handled. In light of the fact that you're dealing with a lot of corporations, usually they're Minnesota and states like that. What would dictate that a case would be heard, say, in a North Carolina environment rather than a Minnesota environment, Wes?
Well, it's where it's filed.
Filed, okay.
Where it's filed. I mean, if you've got a dispute with someone in Minnesota and someone in Minnesota decides they want to file a lawsuit in state court or in federal court in Minnesota, it as long as the jurisdiction is appropriate, which it probably would be because the plaintiff is a citizen or resident of Minnesota, then that's where it'll be situated.
Okay. Well, you know, the other aspect of this, and of course, Cecil, you brought this up related to the diversity aspect and how you get from a state to a federal case. I'm real curious, and we've only got about 3 minutes here to go on this conversation with you, Wes, but, you know, are there instances where you migrate a case from the state court to the federal court? Is there a situation where you say, "Okay, we've got to move to the federal court on this decision"? Or may have started out at a state court debate.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, there's, you know, I am in most of these type cases going to be on the plaintiff's side.
Right.
Sometimes I will be on the defendant's side. If I can have a case, in most cases, I'm wanting to have a case locally because really of a convenience factor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously, if I can sleep in my bed at night, and then go try a case in Carteret County or Craven or somewhere local, then that's a little better, right?
All right, hold on. Cecil, could you mute your phone? I'm sorry. Okay, go ahead.
Get some feedback.
Yeah.
But... You know, sometimes the removal isn't an automatic thing either. Like, what I wanted to mention that I have a current case where it's a case about a man who was severely injured in a boating accident, and it happened to be on Lake Tillery. Okay, this is not a local boating accident.
Right.
and he was injured on a he was injured in a boating accident because the boat hit a log that would otherwise be submerged, and the lake was owned by or is owned by Duke Energy.
Okay.
So, and this and the water levels are controlled by Duke Energy because there's a dam there.
Mm-hmm.
So Duke Energy is the defendant. So when we filed the lawsuit, Duke Energy removed it to federal court.
Okay.
Well, obviously they want it to be, you know, in Charlotte or wherever it would be, as opposed to it being, you know, in the backyard of Stanley County where the lake is. So we objected to that, and that was a probably 6, 8, 10 month, if not a year process, arguing that it should not be removed. And we won that, and so now the case is situated in Stanley County State Court. So we're right back in state court. So there's an opportunity for it to go up on a removal, which would have been appeared proper because they were arguing that there was a federal question because there's some federal law involved mm-hmm. with
right.
regard to the regulation of the lake and the lake levels. But
right.
The federal court came back and said, well, no, this is more of a negligence claim. It's not really about that particular issue of the federal regulation of the water level. So we're kicking it back to state court because there's not really a federal question because Duke Energy, you're situated in North Carolina. So there's no diversity. It has to be a federal question. So we're right back. I know this is kind of heavy conversation, but that just kind of just... Yep.
I find it fascinating because, you know, we hear about a federal court and we assume that it has to specifically have to deal with a federal issue, but you're sharing something with us in the topic of diversity. Really, I think, clarify something, the other aspect of this, and I want to make a personal comment. Here you are in your capacity as an attorney preparing for civil cases at the state level, district court, superior court, but then you have to change your whole thinking process to start thinking about how to deal with it at a federal court level, which is totally different. I think it's fascinating and also obviously very time consuming. As we wrap it up, we're talking, of course, with that was Wes Collins, with Cecil Harvell and Wes Collins of Harvell and Collins. The facts that we gain from these conversations is a clarity. I know it sounds a little confusing, as you said a moment ago, Wes, but actually clarity as the distinction between a state court case and a federal court case. And as we wrap it up, I want to remind you, the simplest way to find out more information about this and other topics, go to their website, harvellandcollins.com. Spell out the word and, harvellandcollins.com, or you can give them a call, 252 area code 726-9050. And with that, Cecil, Wes,
yes.
Thanks very much for your time.
Yeah, very interesting program, Lockwood. Isn't the law... The law truly is fascinating, isn't it? And to think that we wanted our listeners to understand that there actually is a jurisdictional court where due to people in different states and potentially there being a conflict in one state, can find a neutral ground. That's fascinating, isn't it?
It is. To both of you, thanks for being with us this afternoon here on Let's Talk Legal.